I always say, you know, like, there's people that do things for the right reasons, and there's people that do things because they have to, and people that do things because they want to. And this is definitely something that we want to do and we enjoy doing. And hopefully we can just continue to do it for as long as we can, as long as everybody stays healthy and we can keep writing and we have the support and put out music, because this is what we love to do.
Talking Records Podcast, Talking Records Podcast, Talking Records Podcast. We talk about our favorite records, Talking Records Podcast. We're so glad you tuned in. Thank you all for listening. You showed up to the right place. Jed and his friends dive deep and analyze the records we have grown to love. We'll tell you how we found the band, then give you a track-by-track breakdown of all the songs. So grab your favorite beverage and pull up a seat. Today we'll look at another record in its entirety.
Welcome to Talking Records, an album spotlight podcast where we take an album and round up all the information we possibly can and put it all here. I'm just a huge fan of music, and learning about the events and conditions under which my favorite albums were made enhances my enjoyment of the album so much. Sometimes I get lucky, and the people who actually made the album join me on the show. I'll be joined in just a moment by Pulley vocalist Scott Radinsky.
Be sure to follow Talking Records on social media. We can be found on Instagram or Talking Records Podcast. We can also be found on Twitter and YouTube. Give us a like or a follow, and we'll try to keep fresh content coming your way daily. You can also visit our website at talkingrecordspodcast.com. There you'll find episodes, merch, and more. You can even drop us an email at talkingrecords@outlook.com. These are all great ways for us to connect with you over all the great music we enjoy. We would love to get this podcast in front of more music lovers, and you can help us by providing us with a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you consume podcasts, as every review helps us reach more listeners. Also, word of mouth is helpful too. All right, thanks everyone.
I first heard Pulley on the Punk-O-Rama 2 compilation back in 1996 with the song Cashed In. It was an immediate favorite of mine on the disc, especially when I discovered that the band was made up of Jim and Jordan from Strung Out, Matt from No Use for a Name. This was 97, as I was getting into these bands, so I didn't realize Matt was also in Face to Face. But just a great band, standout, loved them. And though the band's lineup changed considerably over the years, one thing always remained consistent. Pulley released fantastic melodic punk albums. I had the opportunity to speak with Scott last year when I invited him on the show to talk about the band's album Matters. During that interview, we talked a little about downtime and the downtime that COVID left us with. And Scott hinted a little about what the band was up to, but didn't tip his hand on a possible album. I was so pumped when the band announced recently that they would be releasing their 8th full-length album, titled Golden Life. Here to tell us more about the Golden Life is vocalist Scott Radinsky. Hey, Scott. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
All right.
Welcome back to Talking Records.
Thank you.
You guys have been pretty busy.
Oh, we're getting ready to be. Kind of busy, but not super busy, but more of this type of stuff. But yeah, we're getting ready to have some fun busy pretty soon.
Yeah. You guys leave next week?
Monday.
Where's the first stop?
Valencia, Spain.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Starting overseas.
Yeah, I was thinking, why didn't we just trudge our way back to the East Coast and then go from there and then work our way back? Yeah. But I guess everybody's jobs didn't allow that. So,
well, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. Last time you were on the show, we talked Matters. Today, we're going to talk about the new album, The Golden Life.
Cool.
All right, so Scott, we're going to jump right in. I'm curious to know, you know, what was the writing process like for this record?
It's pretty much like any other record. I think we've been sitting on some songs for a while, for a few years. The crazy thing was, like, the pandemic kind of accelerated it in a sense where guys didn't have to go to work. So we were, hey, you know what? Let's go to the studio. That's all we really can do. And we trusted each other. So we went there and I think there was a couple times we wore masks early on, just because, you know, we were still kind of paranoid at that early stage of it. Yeah. But yeah, it was me and the two guitar players and Mike and Trey, and we just basically just sat in there and said, "Here's what I got. Here's what you got. Here's what we had before." And we were revisiting some old stuff. And then once we kind of got a little momentum going, because we were going like 2 or 3 days a week, we'd get a little momentum going, and then, you know, within like a 3-4 week period, all this new stuff came, and it was like, this is good. And we just kind of kept going with it. And it started off acoustic stuff. We were like rehashing old songs acoustically. And that's kind of how the whole Spam connection got together.
Right. You guys had that EP.
Yeah. He was interested in putting something out. We didn't have anything, but we had these acoustic songs, and we said, well, we were going to record them on our own. We had this, we were going to do like a couple of songs off each record, do acoustic versions, and yeah. And yeah, they turned out, and we were having fun doing that. And in the process, we were writing, you know, regular, you know, new music as well. Yeah. And so that's how the relationship with him started, is we threw the acoustic songs at him, and he was like, "Hey, can I put this out?" We were like, we were thinking like maybe just put it on YouTube or something, but sure, if you want to. And then, and that just led to him asking about new songs, and which we were in the process of writing. So it kind of worked out. It was worked out at the same time, but that's pretty much how the writing process was. It's me and the two guitar players. I would sit and play drums, and they'd play guitar, and we would just jam riffs and jam and eat and then yeah. jam some more. And you know, being able to be a part of it as a singer helps a lot, because I can kind of hear and help structure like what I'd feel.
Right.
And that's definitely been something we've made an effort or a conscious effort towards the last couple of records, or, you know, handful of records, was focusing around kind of the singing. A lot of times we would just have riffs and they sound great musically, but then I would take them home and I'd be like, well, what the hell am I going to yeah. sing this?
How am I going to so fit something like, over this? Yeah.
Yeah. We just kind of cut out all that, like just went straight to the chase, cut out all the crap, and just streamlined things a lot easier, and found a pretty good way, a pretty good formula to write. So we've been sticking with that. And it was a lot of fun, even though the world was at shit. It was a lot yeah. of fun, and we were very productive.
I mean, you must have felt great about just being able to do something in a time when like nothing was happening.
Oh, for sure. And we've had this rehearsal space in a warehouse for going on close to 30 years. So it was great. I mean, it's totally lived in, as you can imagine, what a, you know, band studio would be like for that length sure. of time. Super homey and comfortable, and we just go and hang out, and it got to the point where we were spitting out a song a day, and it was really good. And nice. like you said, you know, it was sketchy just going to the grocery store. So being able to go there was kind of like, you could let your hair down and just kind of relax yeah. yourself and hang out with some buddies and
be well, that was up. Your bubble. Yeah,
exactly.
That's awesome. So how many songs do you think you guys ended up with before you had to start whittling them down?
Somewhere in the 20s, probably.
Wow. Nice.
We'd start jamming on something. We might get 15, 20, 30 minutes into it. And then, you know, as we're playing it, I'd be constantly trying to come up with a melody or something. Like, what could I sing over? And then, you know, I'd be like, "Hey, I'm sorry, but does anybody hear anything?" And "No, I don't hear anything. You don't hear anything? No, sorry. Okay, well, let's move on. We'll just keep that one for next time and see if anything comes about of that later." But
yeah,
that's kind of the way it works, you know? And we had complete songs with vocals too, that were actually songs we thought were good. And mm-hmm. the closer we got to getting in the studio, we really started kind of clipping some things. And
yeah, I was going to ask if the old stuff kind of made it, once you got into that rhythm of getting together every day and writing new stuff, if the old stuff kind of seemed like, we're writing better stuff now. It's like time to set that stuff aside.
Yeah. The song from like 2 years ago, weren't as cool as the song we wrote yesterday, you know,
these are old.
Yeah.
Well, the album is packed full of great melodies. So, I mean, if you had songs to choose from, you guys obviously picked a really strong vote. You mentioned focusing on the vocals. I think that this album is really melodic. So
it's definitely melodic, and I think it's, you know, it's catchy, might suit some people, and some people might say it's but yeah, that's what came out. And you know, the more simpler songs are some of the easier songs to sing over, and you capture some of the best melodies. So, you know, that was also something. It was like, let's not try to get too intricate and overthink this. And like, well, hey, what if we try this? What if we try that? Let's play this three more times. And we've done that so much in the past that, like I said, I think we've kind of found the formula where, and it's no offense to everybody being in the room at the same time, but we've kind of figured out who can write the songs well together, I think. And that's what we're sticking with.
Yeah, everybody's serious.
Yeah.
That's great. Was there a lot of like emailing back and forth and sending files, or was it because you guys got to see each other every day, did you not have to do that?
Well, we had the mic set up all the time. So when we were doing stuff, we would track it right then and there. And then, you know, we would take it home and I'd spend 3-4 hours in the studio and then come home and spend another 3 hours trying to hash something out. And we spent a lot of time on the phone, you know, more like, hey, what do you think about this? La, la, la. And, yeah, that sounds cool. And that's kind of how it went. Because we were showing up on a regular basis, we really didn't have to do a whole lot of emailing until kind of the end when we were getting everybody else involved and adding parts to it and stuff. And then, you know, going in the studio, it's like, well, we got this guy helping us out behind the board. So you're the sixth member. You use your opinion and not ours. Cause if I have my 2 cents, I'd want to bury everything and crank the the drummer wants the kick and the snare and the bass player wants the bass, you know? So it's like, you make us sound good. And I think you did a great job. So
you added Trey Kleinsmith, you know, the last few years are just a blur. So when did Trey enter the fold?
Well, Trey entered the fold probably somewhere around 1984, you know, as a friend.
I saw that he was an old friend, so.
Yeah, we've been in bands together. He's been in bands that shared that same rehearsal space. And when he got in full-time was probably around the end of maybe 2019-ish, somewhere around there. And he was doing some shows with us, and it just kind of became – I think it started off because one of the guitar players couldn't do some stuff. He was kind of like on a little hiatus, kind of a break. Yeah. So we asked Trey, being a friend, to step in, and he played some live shows, and we did some, not really touring, but some out of state shows. And, it's just a good gel. He's, like I said, been such a long time friend. So it just seemed like a natural fit. And as time progressed, it just became more like, hey, he's kind of part of this and we wanted to keep him part of it. And the other guy was moving on to other things and the other guitar player, Jim. And so it just kind of seemed like a natural progression, natural transition. And it was just an easy fit for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's cool. And I don't know if it's because I knew you had a new guitar player, but my ears perked up. And I know there's a lot of great leads on this record too. A lot of good lead guitar. So letting the new guy take it for a spin, I guess, huh?
He added some cool parts. You know, I know Mike played his traditional little melodic little riffs here and there. And there's no real solos, but there's a lot of like little ear candy that I think it's subtle, but not overdone and tasteful, you know? And Trey definitely, him and Mike have been playing together, the two guitar players in other bands for close to 30 years. So they really feed off each other well. And that you can feel that energy between the two of them because of their longstanding relationship and have, you know, playing together for so long. So it's definitely brought in another level of energy to the group, I think, for sure.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I could hear it. Yeah. I mean, I really like all the guitar work on this record. I'm a guitar player, so naturally I sit and I listen to all the, what's he doing here? You know, like,
yeah.
You know, what strumming pattern is going on at this point? And my ears just really perked up.
Good.
When I was listening to this record, and I was really pleased with some of those lead lines and stuff, those intros, and
yeah,
it was really cool.
Yeah.
Great. You could bring in somebody that you've known for so long rather than try to bring in a brand new person during this, you know, standard time.
For sure. And that's kind of been our way we've done things, you know, since our existence. It's always been somebody we've had some sort of relationship with. So it's never really been somebody we didn't know.
Right. You hire internally.
Exactly. We keep it in the family.
So who produced the record?
We used another friend, musician. His name's Chris Collier. And he's another guy that he's a drummer, guitar player, vocalist. He can do everything, engineer. And he was a part of a band that rehearsed at this studio that or our room that we have, we did a couple of compilation songs with him, like a Christmas song and a Halloween song for, I can't think of the label, Cleopatra, a couple years ago. And he's a local guy. And we were like, well, let's go do it with Chris. We've been talking about this for years. And the vibe and everything just worked out really smooth. So he'd always said to us, hey, when you guys are ready to do a full record, I'd sure love to do it.
And yeah, that's great.
And when it came down to it, you know, it was like, hey, are you available? And he was, and you know, the timing was good. And like, once again, you know, there's history there. So the comfortability, the relationship, and just, you know, the whole vibe. And there's we don't get offended when he pushes us or, you know, says no, or kind of gets in that producer mode. So it was good. And I think he did a great job.
Yeah. You got to have someone you can trust, because producing a record, you could get offended, you know, and someone's like, that doesn't work. And you're like, no, but I'm really committed to this.
and you know, we don't have egos or anything, like it's my way or the highway, but
sometimes
hearing it from someone you don't know can be a little more offensive maybe than, and they don't know you as well. So they don't know how to push the right button. And, you know, having the relationship with him, he could just joke with us and go, man, he goes, you suck. If you can't do it, we'll do another part. It's like, really? Okay. You know, it's just kind of like ribbing back and forth like that. So it was a good vibe. You know,
well, that's great, because it's like, I'm joking, but I'm not joking. Like, get back in there and try that again. So what other kinds of things did he bring to the table production wise?
Well, he, you know, being a musician, he's got a great ear. And I think a lot of those little riffy leads and a lot of the bass lines and, you know, some of the harmonies and the backgrounds and stuff, that a lot of that, you know, was his input. And, you know, hey, try this. We'd try it and go, wow, that's pretty cool. You know? So, you know, he definitely had a little bit of input in some of the songs, you know, some of the helping of, you know, creating the song. But, you know, I think more than anything, what he brought was the ability to get the best out of us. And, you know, whether that was taking 3 takes or 20 takes, he knew what we were capable of doing. And he just kind of didn't let us stop until we got it. And that trust in him was, once he said, all right, cool, man, that's good, we knew it was good. You know,
awesome.
Like still wondering ourselves, like, did I hit that? Did I nail it?
Yeah. You're holding your breath.
Exactly.
That was a good one. All right.
Yeah.
And so you've mentioned a few times that the place where you rehearsed was also where you did some recording. So did you record the album right where you were rehearsing?
No, it's like a warehouse. Okay. It's just a band rehearsal space. And we just, you know, we just set up some mics in there and record on our own home, you know, computer or something.
For just demos and stuff.
Demo stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So where did you record the album?
We did the drums in a place in LA area. And then we did the rest of it at his home studio, which is another cool vibe where you're not in a, you know, it's cool being in a studio, but it's not the same as being in like this house where it's just warm and comfortable. And he's got a great setup in the room where he, you know, kind of, it's a good vibe. So that's what we did. We tracked the drums for a couple of days in one place and then just did the rest of everything else in his house.
That's really neat. I feel like those house studios are great. I mean, to be able to just hang out and like, it feels a little bit more personal and it's, you know, people can get more comfortable. And I think it's great that is a possibility these days. You no longer have to like sit around in the studio all day.
There's a lot of pressure that goes with the studio when you're paying for a daily rate and you got to get something done. And, you know, where like at the house, it's like, be hungry? Yeah, I'm hungry. Let's go eat. We'll come back and try this in a little bit, you know?
Yeah. So what were the sessions like? Was it, you know, one guy at a time, or did you guys try to, you said you did the drums in one place. When you go to do like guitars and bass, do you guys try to do that together or one at a time?
Well, we tracked the drums and Sean, the drummer, he really wanted like both guitar players there playing along with him. Our bass player was, he was working a lot and he wasn't really like, I don't want to say he wasn't a part of it because he was 100% a part of it, but we did a lot of the demoing, the four of us, in our own studio, and a lot of the songwriting. So when we went into the studio, he really wanted the guitar players there playing live with him. So they were in the actual lot of times guitar players will sit in the control room and they'll, you know, hear on the playback speakers and they'll play along, and the drummer's in the isolation booth by himself. They were in there with him.
Oh, nice.
And the three of them, it was like at band practice, you know, they were in there jamming together. And then once we got out of there, the two guitar players tracked together the same way they both tracked live together. And I don't know if they were both recording at the same time, or it was they were both playing together and one was tracking, and then they would go back and do the same thing and the other guy would play.
Oh, wow.
So that was what they did there. And then the bass player went in, Tyler went in by himself, and he played, knocked his stuff out in a few days.
Yeah.
And then I went in. It was just kind of like a cycle where, like, once we went to his house, it was like both guitar players for 5 days and then no days off. And the bass player was in there for a couple of days. As soon as the bass player was done, I came in. It was just continuous for Chris, the engineer, the producer. And that's kind of how that went about. But yeah, I guess we were individual as we were doing our own thing, but there was times when we were together as well.
That's great. It's great that they were both in the room with him.
Yeah, it's cool. I've never seen
that. Must have gotten really tiring, though.
Yeah, they were on their feet for hours. I know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Playing the same song over and over again, because the thing you're recording is the thing that has to be perfect, but the scratch stuff doesn't have to be perfect. And I imagine you kind of lose focus after a while, you know?
Oh, I'm sure. And, you know, like, I know Sean would have a take and feel really good about it. And he would look in and Chris would be like, well, you know, there's a couple parts here you rush, and his head would go down, and everybody's head was go down. Oh, we got to do it again. Okay.
Oh, God, you know,
that's the grind of recording a record, you know?
Yeah.
That's part of the deal.
At least they're all like 2 and 3 minute songs.
Yeah. And they were all full takes. It's not like we were cutting and pasting anything. Yeah. So. You know, that's good. They did it good. We were prepared, though. I mean, that's the thing, is we were so prepared going in, which I can't say that about every record we've done, but I can say that, like, by trimming the fat on a lot of the songs and getting to the point and getting the structure of the song and how many times we had done this at home, it just didn't feel like, oh my God, we're going to the studio. It was just like, oh, we're going to go record these songs again. And it was, I'm not going to say easy, but it was definitely easier than it's been in the past. That's for sure.
Sounds like it was smoother, less hemming and hawing over things and leaving things kind of undone to come back later. And
I think a lot of times going into the studio, you kind of have that approach where, like, I don't really know what I'm going to do, but I'll figure it out once I get in there.
Yeah.
And we knew what we were doing, which was cool. And then, like, you know, just having Chris add that little bit of try this or try that. It wasn't a big tweak on what we had originally written. It was just a tiny little, you know, little subtle little enhancement to try to bring it out a little differently. And whether that could have been tone wise or try this guitar or, you know, go bare now now instead of bare now, you know, something stupid. But, it makes a difference in the end, you know. It does, and it's nice to see it come together like that at the end, you know, for sure.
Yeah, to hear everything put together on those beautiful speakers in the studio.
it's a tease, that's for sure.
Yeah. Then you run out to the car and you put it in there and you're like, oh, this could be louder. And
yeah.
So Scott, diving into some of the tracks, the album starts with Repeat Offender, which starts off with like a chant or something, like a rising whoa. I think that was really cool. I wasn't expecting it. And it was just a great way to start the record. Is that you doing that?
I did the woes, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was Chris's idea to kind of fade into it like that. We had messed around before talking about, like, hey, this might be a cool way to start the record, but we didn't have the envision of it kind of slowly creeping up and getting bigger. And then, you know, and then it repeats it in the song. Basically, it's a chorus. I kind of like that. It's cool. It's something different we haven't really done a whole lot of.
Yeah.
Not trying to be Pennywise-ish, but it seems fitting for the song.
Yeah, and to kick off the record like that, I thought it was really cool. And, you know, I wondered when I was listening to it if, you know, given the pandemic and given the extra time and the togetherness, if you guys were feeling more, you know, a little bit like, hey, let's try some different stuff. Let's do some stuff we haven't done. Like, I don't know, I feel like that environment kind of encourages a little bit of, like, you know, maybe taking chances on things.
Yeah, and the time and the time allowed it, you know, with those guys being off work and not that we were getting bored with what we had, but it was like
right.
We tried to exhaust every avenue possible. And you know, the advent of a home studio now and you know the four of us having access to it, you know, we would get done with a you know, like with a jam session and, you know, maybe Trey would go home and go, hey, I wrote this part over there. Cause you know, he would just be doing rhythms. Him and Mike would play the same rhythm together, you know, as we're originally writing the track. And then, you know, they would go home and have the ability to like, and the time to get creative. And it certainly brought out, I would say some of that for sure. I think more than anything, it just brought out the ability to have the time to spend to try to make the song as best as possible and exhaust as many different avenues as possible until we found something we liked. And I think you can hear that, you know?
Yeah. Is there ever a time when someone goes down an avenue that maybe the rest of the band is like, I don't know about that?
Well, it happens for sure.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, most of that would be in just the song structure itself. Sure. And I think, you know, trimming it down to where it was the three of us that were a part of a majority of the writing process, it eliminates a lot of that, as we would call a run on sentence, where it's just a musical riff and you're just going to try to sing over it.
Yeah.
but you know, Trey or Mike would, you know, on the guitaring side of stuff would say, hey, what do you think of this? And like, well, that sounds killer, you know, or Mike would say, well, try this too. And then Trey would do that. And then, or Trey would, you know, vice versa. And Sean, you know, he would just kind of play a basic beat and then he would go home. And this guy's just an animal. He would spend, you know, till midnight, you know, just beating on his legs or the pillows with his sticks. And he would literally write parts and take notes and write parts and take notes. And then the next time we would get in the studio, you know, to rehearse with him, it'd be like, wow, this is starting to come together. And so it was cool. Yeah, it was pretty cool. And it definitely allowed to be more creative for sure.
Yeah. And I like that idea of people like going off and then coming back with stuff and just like building it up, you know?
That's exactly what it was.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Some bands you have like, you know, the guitarist comes in, I've got my song and, you know, and there's really not a whole lot of room for that, but it sounds really cool that it sounds really great that you guys are all willing to sort of
We don't have egos. We kind of feed off each other. And I think it's, you know, I know there's a lot of bands where there's a songwriter in the band and that they write all the songs and they take all the publishing and that's what they do. We've never been that. We've never operated that way. You know, there's songs that I wrote. There's songs that Mike wrote. He wrote lyrics and music. And he'd mm-hmm. come with a song and go, hey, check this song out I have. And we'd make little tweaks to it and, you know, maybe trim apart or something. And nobody's got an issue with it. We're all totally willing to collaborate that way because your opinion is going to be different than mine. And I need that to make this better. And that's kind of the approach we take.
Lonely is the second song you guys released leading up to the album. A song about a big mouth with a lot of self-importance. What inspired that?
You know, I think the cool thing about the lyrics is you can take it how you want to take it. And,
yeah.
You know, it's probably, what inspired it was just a lot of, interactions with people over the course of life. It's really not about an individual per se, mm-hmm. but more about individuals and pieces from different experiences of, you know, kind of watching the perspective of watching people from afar and how they go about their life or about their day just kind of pulled it all together into one track or one song. The inspiration was, like I said, it came from 30 years, 35 years of being in a corporate environment and seeing different egos,
just experiences
and how they went about handling their own personal business.
Yeah, I just feel like more so in the last few years, like everybody's opinions have now become like fact and people are just like really, you know, like holding strong to their opinions and views. And it just seems like nobody's listening to each other. It's everybody's just yelling, you know, at each other.
I'm sure we could say it's been more than the last couple of years where that's kind of, there's people blowing off steam all the time, but
right. I guess I've been home reading about it more.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's a very opinionated world we live in, that's for sure.
Yeah. Scott, one of my absolute favorite songs on the record is Align the Planets. I love the song. It's got a great structure to it. It starts off acoustically, and then throughout the song, there's a point where you jump keys. I love it. So tell me about like putting that song together.
Well, that's definitely one of those songs, as you were talking about, like having the time to be more creative. It's not your traditional punk type pulley song, I guess, you know, per se. It was written originally on an acoustic guitar, and it had a lot of Spanish influence to it. I mean, you can hear it even on electric. It's got that, you know, like that Spanishy kind of feel to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of got that little flamenco-y kind of, you know,
cool.
Riff.
Yeah.
and then Sean, the drummer, when he heard it and he was playing, he's like, man, he's like, this is like an old surf tune, you know, like, da-da-da-da-da-da. And he's like, picture like myself being up somewhere in Northern California on this big wave. And it's like, well, that, I never thought about that, but it opened our minds to like a different perspective to it. But that was a cool jam. I mean, from the first time we heard it was like Mike had this riff and he's like, you know, he's like, I was messing with this riff last night. I really don't know if it's a pulley song, but what do you guys think? And when I first heard it, I was like, wow, that's killer. You know, that sounds great. And you know, Trey was like, yeah, I dig that. And just kind of kept going. And I do like that it's different. You know, it's different, and it's not just the traditional, you know, verse, chorus, bridge, verse, outro, song's over.
Yeah,
it's got some different changes into it, and it is different. It's got a cool vibe to it, and you know, I think lyrically it's kind of cool, and it has a story, and it's a real song. It's definitely a real song.
Yeah, it's very musical. I think it's great.
Yeah, thank you.
I love songs that, like you said, don't follow that like typical song structure. You know, I like a little adventure in my songs, you know.
Yeah.
Where's it gonna go next? What's happening, you know?
That makes it interesting.
Yeah.
For sure.
And it was cool because you guys had done the acoustic EP and I was like, oh cool, an acoustic song. But then all of a sudden, bam, you get into that cool guitar riff and I was like, oh, all right.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah, I think we always envision, you know, some drums to that and not being totally acoustic without some sort of percussion behind it. And I think it would be a good one to play acoustically. It really would be. But we added the distortion to it, a little bit of loudness to it, and turned up the amp and it's a song that we could potentially play live now without having to take off the guitar and put on something different and force me to really be on point to try to sing.
Yeah.
It's nice to hide behind a little distortion every once in a while.
Oh, definitely.
Or all the time.
Yeah. When you take all that away, it feels really like like you're on the spot.
Oh, it's so challenging. You know, those acoustic songs were so challenging to sing because you can hear so clearly.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, recording a record's challenging as well. Don't get me wrong, but,
right.
You know, it's a... it's just a lot easier when you hear that distortion in your ears, you know.
It's kind of like holding you up, you know.
Exactly.
Got that wall of sound behind you. You're at the front, you know, and you just have everything behind you. And
a little bit of room for forgiveness, you know.
Yeah. And I'm sure guitar players and bass players would agree, you know.
Oh God,
I mean, well, I flubbed that, but no one knows.
You know, being a guitar player, I mean, the difference between plugging in and playing a Les Paul through a Marshall compared to a Telecaster through a, you know, a Fender Twin Reverb or something. It's big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to the song Wake Up. This song has a really powerful message of, you know, pick yourself up and try to make the best of things. You know, what are some things that help you keep a positive mind?
Probably all the shit that I've had to deal with on a personal level in my life, you know, whether it be health or, you know, career-wise, just the ups and downs of life in general. And being drawn to negativity is the easiest thing to do. I mean, it just, negativity tends to gravitate individuals. You know, it's easy to be negative.
It is
really hard to be positive. And I don't know at what point in my life I made a conscious effort to steer clear of those people that were just, you know, downers all the time and mm-hmm. just kind of thrived on that negativity. And it's just nothing good comes out of it. And it's not the kind of life I want to live. So without being fake or trying to put on some false hat, I think I just kind of made an effort to say, this is who I'm going to be. And this is how I'm going to live my life. And that's kind of what I do. And that's kind of how it came about.
Yeah. Well, I walk through hell and you can walk through heaven. I just thought that was really great. And I think you're so right. I mean, negativity, that energy, I feel like when you're just immersed in that energy, like everything you do starts from that point. Whereas if you think positively, like even a bad situation can be addressed or dealt with easier when you're in a positive mindset. So I just think that's really great.
The sun's always shining somewhere, you know?
Yeah. The first song you guys released, Golden Life, was a song. I was reading about it. You stated that you feel kids are being robbed of an experience due to the overuse of technology. So let's dive into that a bit. What kinds of experiences, what kinds of things do you think kids are losing out on?
I guess being older, I look back at thinking about, like, I'll just use this for an example. There's a lot of great to technology. Us sitting here right now, seeing each other, having this conversation is and letting other people be able to hear it through technology is a great thing. I think back to, like, as an example, digging through a record bin as a kid and looking at a record and holding it and flipping it over and wondering if this is something I might like, because I hadn't heard it, hadn't heard this band. You know, the music that I listened to wasn't on the radio. I maybe read about it in a fanzine, Maximum Rock and Roll or something. And I'm taking a chance. I've got to work for this. You know, when I first started playing music, we had to work to be heard. We had to, you know, we had to do something to get our message across and out there. Yeah. And, you know, in some ways it's good that the saturation of it now, it's the accessibility of somebody can record in their garage and sound better than we used to sound in a studio back in the 80s and put it out online 2 days later. I don't want to say that's robbing somebody, but I think it's taking away the good old fashioned work, hard work ethic that it, you sure, know, that, yeah. that, you know, the sweat on your back to make something happen. And I guess I don't want to sound too old or dated by you know, grumpy old man, but,
curmudgeon.
But you know, I mean, older people in my generation, when I was a kid, the older people were saying the same thing to me.
Right.
You know, and I guess it's just kind of that, you know, you're in a position now where you remember how hard it was to access information, to you know, the things you had to do, the things you had to read, you know, like I said before, the work you had to do. And you know, now it's as easy as push of a button. And
sure, yeah.
Maybe that's not robbing somebody, maybe that's a poor choice of word right there. But it's just making it easier in a sense, which is kind of losing out on.
They kind of missed the journey.
Exactly. That's the word I was looking for. You know, the journey it takes to get to that end of that, to that end result. And I guess that's kind of what it's really about, to sum it up.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Easy is nice and convenience is nice, but absolutely. I feel like, you know, I teach fifth grade, so I work with kids and I feel like, yeah, they don't have as much patience, you know, like waiting for something isn't really a thing that they have to do. And, you know, just kind of being like creative problem solving, I feel like is something that, people are kind of losing out on because everything is just so easy. You want to find an answer to something, you can literally speak out loud in your living room and a little box will answer you and
exactly.
tell you the answer. So, you know,
and that's what I think, you know, like the kids you deal with, that's what they're used to. They probably have iPads or their parents, they borrow their phone and they, hey Siri, and they get an answer like with a push of a button, or like you said, speak out loud in the room. You know, I know in a career that that I spent a lot of time with, watching that sport evolve and the technology and how it was brought in, and there's a lot of great to it. It's benefited a lot of people. It made my job a lot easier as a coach, you know? But I don't know if it allowed, you know, the pupil to sustain and digest for the rest of his life. And I think there's something to be said. You're standing in front of a classroom and you're teaching kids. And that's how I remember. That's how I learn. And a kid that's looking online at something, like you said, patience, it's so non-existent now. Everybody's, it seems like the whole world's got ADD, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Just looking at all like the people now, they're posting like these quick videos, like they're quick 10 seconds of fame, like, you know, getting on there and getting out there and getting views. And it is kind of crazy.
Yeah. Is that what it's about? Like, that's what my kids always refer to. Oh, he's got 2 million followers. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? Does that make him like smart? Does that make him like what he says worthy, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Deal. But that's where the world's at. I guess, like, going back and repeat myself again.
Yeah.
Is it robbing? I don't know, but that's kind of what I'm trying to get across.
You know? Yeah. I can hear that. It's kind of like a plea for, hey, you know, step back a little and look at, you know, expand your vision, I guess. That's what I take away from it. And you guys did a cool video for that with the lyric video.
Yeah. Yeah. That was cool.
It looked really great.
Yeah, Spam did that. That was really good. It turned out nice. It was good.
It's awesome.
It's cool. It's cool to like to see something like that. I wasn't a really big fan of the whole lyric video things.
Yeah.
But I kind of enjoyed it, you know. And maybe having done one ourselves, it was like, all right, maybe these are cool. You know?
Yeah. This is how people are reading lyrics now, you know.
Exactly.
Used to be you pulled the sheet out of the vinyl sleeve and you sat there trying to look at the tiny little writing.
I still do.
Yeah.
It's harder to read now, harder to read now with my eyes than it was, you know, when I was 15. But I absolutely, that's a lost thing.
Yeah. But I guess one could say the experience is now, the journey now of people that are consuming music is the lyric video, you know, the downloading music, all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, absolutely.
Someday they'll have kids and they'll be annoyed that their kids are doing something that's different than what they're doing now.
I mean, you can't be old school. You've got to evolve with the times or you're going to get lost. You can't be opposed to, you know, technology and the future. You have to, it's necessary nowadays, 100% necessary. But I'm very glad that I got to see a transition in my life and, you know, and kind of have an understanding of before, now, and hopefully be a part of the future.
The album closes with an ode to California, and I got a sense of like community. Like I was really trying to dig into that song a little bit, trying to make sense of it. And I rarely ask people to explain what songs mean to me, but I kind of get the sense that you were talking like, you know, we've been on our own for so long, but this is where we belong, like as a community, as a people.
Definitely. You know, it's funny because lyrically, I want to say that was the one song up to about, that was the last song I did on the record, me personally, to sing. And I just didn't like the lyrics that we had. And we'd wake up, I was staying at Chris's house and he has a separate recording, you know, room where his studio is. And, you know, we would roll in there around 11 or so. I'd wake up and go eat breakfast and then, you know, get myself ready and go in there like around 11. And he'd be like, what do you want to do today? I'm like, anything but California.
Yeah.
You know? And that ended up being the last song. And we kind of tweaked some of the lyrics a little bit towards the end there. There's definitely a sense of pride of where we belong there as well. And where we're comfortable, where I can rest my head and feel safe. I think you hit on it pretty good there with that sense of community and that belonging.
I think it's a great song. So whatever you did, kicking the can down the road a little bit, you must have known that there was something in the back of your mind that was going to get it there. And that I love hearing stories like that. Like, I think it's really cool to hear how songs come together and, you know, maybe what some of the hurdles are.
If I think the listener only knew I'll bet you we would all be surprised at how songs really come together and how like last minute sometimes some of the best things come out. And like I mentioned before, how prepared we were. For whatever reason, that was one song where I just, you know what, that's going to stay in the back pocket here. And I've been in this situation before, and when it gets to that time, it's going to happen. Yeah. And I'd like to think it did, you know. It's a different song too. It's on the slower end of things, but it's got a good groove to it, I think. And I really like the choruses. You know, I like the way the words came out and how they were pronounced and explained. And I'm happy with the end result for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of great, you know, classic Poli sounding tunes on here. There's a lot of new stuff to hear. I think the album is just a great collection of, you know, where you've been and where you're going. And like I said earlier, great melodies on this album.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's something you're always self-conscious as a singer. I'm always like, did I overdo it? Is it too sappy? Is it like punk enough? You know, you wonder that a lot. There's a lot of self-consciousness that goes into, especially on my end. I don't hide behind six strings or drumsticks. You know, it's like kind of like it's there and it's heard. And I'm not, you know, the most confident singer, I guess, maybe, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah.
But it's just, you're always self-conscious of, you know, hearing yourself. I don't, you hear yourself back when you talk. It's like, God, is that what I really sound like?
Yeah. You know? When you listen to a message or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Do I sound like that?
Exactly.
I got to think though, you've been recording long enough that maybe you're a little bit used to your voice now, but maybe not, you know, that's interesting.
For the most part, I think I know what I'm going to sound like. I'm used to that. I'm accustomed to like hearing it playback now. Mm-hmm. What's the hardest part is like, God, did I do the best I could? Because when you hear, like even now, you know, I've heard these songs now since January. Mm-hmm. And I'm singing different melodies to them. Thinking like, yeah. God, why didn't I do that? But I mean, you know, you don't have 6 years to sit and hash out a song. You know, it's kind of it's kind of the way it is. But you know, you hope that usually your first instincts are kind of the right path to go down. So I've learned that years ago to where what I feel coming out naturally is kind of probably somewhere in the realm of where I need to be. Now it's just a matter of fine tuning that. You know,
sure. Yeah, and you don't want to overthink it.
Yeah, exactly. Which is easy to do.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the artwork for the album. You once again tap the great Mark DeSalvo for the cover art. Mark tells me that you had very specific ideas for what you were looking for on the cover. So what inspired these ideas?
Mark has a lot of ideas himself, and he can take something this and turn it into that. which is why we continue to go to him. You know, his perspective on things, I think he kind of has an idea of, okay, I'm going to do a Poli record. I know what they sound like. We send him the songs. He listens to them. He's like, it's what I expect. What kind of ideas do you guys have? Well, we were thinking about this. We were thinking about that. And then maybe a week later, he'll come back with something totally different. But kind of in the ballpark, but totally different and way better than anything we've ever explained to him. So I give him 100% of all credit when it comes to the artistic side of this, you know, and a lot of times the concept. We throw out an idea. We threw out the idea of like, you know, this trailer in a desert and, you know, this guy, he's, you know, watering this green patch of grass in the desert. That's about as specific as we got it. He kind of took it to another level, you know, oh, hey, what do you think about an Airstream and this and that, you know, everything he does is always golden to us. And he totally did the back cover on his own. And we had some ideas of like something different. It was like a bunch of flyers and things like that. And this kid in his bedroom. And then he just said, hey, send me some pictures of you guys live. And he just kind of made this collage. And I really like the back cover a lot. I think the back cover could be a front cover as well. I mean, he's so good. And the colors he uses, I just think it identifies with, you know, the records we've done in the past. And you know, going back to what I mentioned earlier, I want a kid who's never heard Pulley before to thumb through a record bin and see this, or even, you know, he's on his computer, he's online, and or he's on Instagram, and he sees the image and he's like, man, that's something I would like to listen to. Mm-hmm. And I think what you see with your eyes, you almost can hear, if that makes sense. You can almost hear what you see with your eyes with his art. And he does such a good job of implementing the colors and just orchestrating everything. And I mean, we can't give him enough credit for what he does, you know?
And I agree with you on that. Like, the tone of the record kind of comes through in the art. And when I listen to this record, especially when I hear like a song like Align the Planets, and I hear like that kind of like Spanish guitar, like that Midwestern feel of that, and like you get the tumbleweeds in the back on the art and the blue sky. Oh yeah. I totally see what you're talking about with that.
That's what he's so good at, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I guess he hid some Easter eggs on there. Is that Chad on the cover from Urethane?
It is. You know what's cool is I have an actual, you know, Mark took a photo of Chad, you know, watering, and in the photo he's got like this pink hair and it's all thrown up and he's sitting in a lawn chair, and you can kind of see it. You know, I recognize it, of course, because I saw the actual real photo and I was like, oh man, I hope he kind of makes it a little more cartoony and not like so perfect, because that's really obvious. But yeah, it was great.
People are going to wonder why we have. Yeah, he had to tell me. I had no idea.
Yeah. But once he
then, of
told
course, I'm
you,
looking at it, I'm like, oh yeah.
Exactly. Once he told you, like, that's him. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's cool that you know about that. Hey, keep it in the family.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
What are your plans once the record comes out? Are you guys looking at, I mean, you mentioned going overseas. Are you looking at like a full scale tour? Or are you going to do like little blocks of touring, or what's the game plan?
Well, define a full scale tour.
Yeah.
You know, are we going to go out on the road for 9 months and hit every continent? Definitely not.
No, you're not going to live in a van for.
No, I don't think so. I mean, as much as we would love to, we have jobs and families and lives, and really difficult. And we've never done that. But we have a lot on our plate here in 2022. You know, we're super fortunate to think we have a few weeks in Europe here coming up. And then we do a run in Eastern Canada. And then in another month or so, 2 months, we go to the western side of Canada and do a run of some shows up there. And then we're going to go back out to the UK some point later in the year. And then, you know, do the regular thing we do here pretty much in our general area as much as we can, and just see where it goes from there. But we have some exciting stuff, some stuff that we're excited about to go be a part of, and bands that we're going to get to play with. And, you know, it's like a punk rock vacation.
Sure thing. Yeah, I hope some good festivals open up this summer and, you know, there's some chances to get out and see some bands and stuff.
Yeah.
Hope you guys can get out to the East Coast at some point.
Would be nice. I never rule that out. I would love to, you know, we get a lot of mail from people, you know, that are a lot of, you know, whatever they write to us about, you know, playing in, you know, New York, Detroit, Philadelphia, sure. You know, the East Boston. Coast, Florida. Would love to do a 2-week run and cover as many of those cities as we can, if it's possible. But a lot of times it's not that good for us when we're by ourselves. So we try to hook on to another tour with a band that, you know, can make it worth the while. And you know, it's not a financial thing we're looking at. It's just more like, if we're going to go do it, we want to play in front of some people.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you know, hopefully that comes about at some point. Would love for
Very
it.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. I know for sure that I can speak on behalf of the guys that, you know, for the time that we've been putting into this whole thing, playing in a band, which has been 3/4 of our lives mostly. And, you know, we're all in our 50s now, so it's been a long time. It's been a project of passion for us. We've never been that band that's, you know, made it, so-called made it, you know, we don't financially make a living on the band. We've been doing it to break even for our entire existence. And that's passion right there, to still have the love to write and play live. And more than anything, get along with each other.
That's awesome. And by doing it that way, you slice off a giant chunk of that pressure. And so that must feel nice.
Well, it's like when we all started jamming, we were all jamming in a garage, you know, learning how to play our instruments. And it's like, we kind of figured out how to play our instruments kind of, and we're still taking that jamming in a garage approach. And it, you know, playing live is just a bonus. And then being able to do things like this and talk to people and share the music and have it received is, what more can you ask for? You know?
Can't ask for much more than that.
Nah.
Well, Scott, I really appreciate you making time for me tonight, coming on Talking Records and talking about The Golden Life. It's a fantastic album. I can't wait for it to be out there in the world for people to hear. It's a great album.
Thank you so much, and appreciate, you know, the positive comment there, and hopefully everybody else enjoys it as well.
Yeah, I think they will.
I hope so. Thanks.
All right, Scott. Take care, man.
And you too.
Well, there you go, folks. I would like to thank Scott so much for hanging out with me today and talking about The Golden Life. I would like to thank Mike from Earshot Media and Nick Jostin from Joe PR. I would like to thank Chris DeMakes from Less Than Jake for the theme music. I'd like to thank Craig for continuing to tease me for not knowing who Fugazi was in ninth grade. And thanks to all of you for tuning into Talking Records. This podcast was born out of a love for music. Talking music, and understanding more about music. For me, and I assume you as well, you're listening to this, the context, stories, and details give me such a deeper appreciation for these incredible records. Thank you for listening, and thank you for interacting with us on social media. Check us out at talkingrecordspodcast.com, where all of our episodes are. Also, find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. I think. Are we on Facebook? Yeah, all right, I think so. Take care, everyone. Remember, the ideal climate for vinyl record storage is 65 degrees to 70 degrees Fahrenheit and about 45 to 50% humidity. All right, take care, everybody. Bye-bye.